it is. Brings you. Cam's just got it.
I didn't hear whoop. I heard whoop. There it is. I'm like, okay, that makes no sense to me, but okay.
That's his chant.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand now that he said whoop because that's not what I heard.
Phoenix City.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix City. Dave's laughing at me the way I said hello.
Yep.
Yep, that was weird.
I always say hello.
That's not the voice weird. You normally do.
No.
Was it weird?
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry about that. Hello and welcome
to Phoenix. You decided to try a deeper register for no reason. It was
deeper.
Interesting.
Okay. Well, welcome to Phoenix City, everybody. Dave and Cam both here. How are we doing, gentlemen?
Yes, I'm glad I'm getting to talk football with you boys at the end of the day.
Great.
Yeah. Yep, not too bad.
Perfect. Sounds like I had the best day out of everybody.
It's not been the greatest day.
All right. Well, let's talk some football. We're going to talk today. We're going to do a season review, essentially, looking at the season that we've just been, the 2021 season, because I refuse to call it the 2020 season because we played no games in 2020. And look over the...
You're calling it the 20/21 season?
No, that was 2021, as in the year of our Lord and Saviour, Jesus.
Sounds the other way.
Roy Krishna.
Lord and Saviour, Roy Krishna. Like.
And we're going to look our eye over the squad, how everybody went, get rid of, that kind of thing that we do. But first of all, let's talk about a player who's actually been signed for the Phoenix. We got released today. Very rude of the Phoenix to announce something the day that we recorded the podcast rather than the
really
day after.
It's unusual for it to come out before we record.
I mean, if this is what they're announcing today, just wonder what they're going to announce tomorrow. Anyway, they've announced that Gary Hooper is back at the Phoenix for a two-year contract after leaving to head to India. Good news. Good news?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah?
If this can be taken as confirmation that Hemed is leaving... And obviously that's been rumoured on the social medias for quite a little couple of weeks, basically. Yeah. Okay, I'm quite comfortable with Gary Hooper as a replacement for Tom Ahmed. I'd love to have Ahmed stay, and I've been a detractor of his for a long period this season. But the form he was in come the end of the season was quite phenomenal, and if he could have kept that going, fantastic.
Would you still want him to stay?
If we could have Hooper and Ahmed... as our starting pair up front, we wouldn't exactly be mobile, but I think if we could get them service, we would score some goals.
We would be immobile.
Oh, bro.
It's a player I learned about this week.
Uh-huh. Did you not know about him?
No.
And in Italian, it also means immobile.
Does it really?
It really does, which is kind of odd because he's quite quick.
Isn't he going somewhere else in the A-League? Isn't someone else going for him?
Immobile?
Yeah.
The starting centre forward for Italy?
Yep. I think Perth Glory, I think Tony P was tweeting that he's going after Immobile.
I mean, good luck to him.
Incredibly unlikely that he would leave.
Was it him or was it Insigne? Someone like that.
That seems much more likely.
More likely? Okay. Yep. Anyway.
Yeah, good signing. Yeah. I think this has to be taken as confirmation that Hamid's not staying.
There's not the money there, basically.
Even if there was the money, I don't think this is where you'd spend it.
No.
If you had the budget to sign both those players... what are you going to do in your midfield? You have to replace Uli still. You need to save some coin for that, I think. This was one or other, and Hamed, I would say, has had a contract in front of him. It certainly sounded like we've made him an offer, probably quite a reasonable one. He's taken too long. We've signed Hooper instead. That's what I think's happened here. We had a run at Hamed. He was umming and ahhing, or maybe he'd decided no. Either way, Hooper's available. We know Hooper as well. Two-year deal. Seems like good business.
And with a full preseason in his legs.
Yeah.
I think that'll make a world of difference to his performance.
We signed him very late last time around, didn't we?
We did.
He didn't
even play for the first couple of games.
Yeah. Season was just about to start. Yeah.
And there was obviously issues around the injuries that he was carrying and the extra weight because of the injuries. Come the end of the season, he was being lethal.
Yeah.
And once he got the minutes in his legs, he really was proving to be the player that he can be. And I think with that preseason, it'll make just a massive difference.
I think this is a no-brainer. Obviously, he'll have another year and a half of oldness in him, but he is a proven scorer and a proven scorer in Ufuk's system.
Yep.
And the fact that they know each other already, he's been here and succeeded here, I think this is an absolute no-brainer. And I have no problem with flicking Hemed for him if that's what we've done. And if it's a case of Hemed's not signing for us and we've replaced him, great to do it this early.
I think this also might be a little bit of a carrot for the lifestyle sell. If you know, we try and use, because obviously it's hard to attract players with dollars to come to Wellington, but if you sell the lifestyle and they like it, like your Taylors and your Balls do, this could be the sort of thing, like he's gone, actually I really love living in Wellington and I'm going to go back there now.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I think the other promising thing I'd say is even when Hooper was unfit, before we saw him scoring goals himself, the amount of attention he was taking from defenders was huge. Even unfit and not that mobile, he was drawing in 1-2 defenders every time, which Hemed we saw provide some assists, and you know, he was integral for a number of goals, not just the ones he scored. But I think Hooper, in you know, his first stint with us, was the cause of a lot of goals. And I don't know that Hemed was that same force up there where he was dragging in 2 or 3 defenders every single time, you know, because you had to be on him. I think he was providing through nice touches and some of that towards the end there. But Hooper, just as a presence up there, drew defenders and it created goals for the team. If we can have him fit and scoring as well as drawing defenders the way he did, that'll be phenomenal.
And the combination that he built with David Ball in particular, the number of goals between those two, I mean, I don't have stats to hand, but anecdotally, I'd love to know the number of assisted goals for Ball from Hooper and the other way around as well. I think that was quite high proportionally for what we were scoring. And I'm excited to see that pairing play out again.
Yeah. I'm excited to see that with Reno playing behind them.
Yeah.
Because the player that he was the first time Hooper was here, he's a much better player now.
Absolutely.
Oh, and Hooper and Wayne will be an interesting one to see as well.
And imagine what Wayne can learn from Gary Hooper. I think he's an excellent signing.
And even if we only play one of Wayne or Hooper, either way around, one of them paying 65 minutes, the other one coming on for the last 25, I'm happy with that. Like, Ben Wayne is a great player, but he's probably not your workhorse 90 minutes week in, week out. And Gary Hooper probably doesn't have 90 minutes in him every week. But imagine bringing on Gary Hooper with 30 to go. And you've given Wayne game time. Or if the other way around, you bring on Ben Wayne who can run at somebody in the last 30. And you're not asking Hooper to do the 90 minutes.
Off the shoulder of a guy like Hooper who can play hold up play exceptionally well. Yeah, I think that would be really good.
Yeah, I think that is going to be great for the Phoenix, that pairing in particular. I think that's why we're not going to see Hemed back. I don't think there's any reason for him to stick around now that we have Hooper. I think we're all in agreement about that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Done. Well done, Phoenix.
Yeah. Good piece of business this early.
Yeah, and just a few good pieces of business in a row, which is great.
Signing up Tails.
Yeah.
That's an excellent piece of business.
Yep.
As we'll cover off later on, his impact on the squad was significant.
Huge.
Yep. Even at the age his legs are.
Yep.
Signing up Hooper, an extended contract. I think that just it shows intent from the ownership, which is really, really good.
And you also have to factor in that contract that they showed to Uli Devia. The intent is there. Yep. They want to win the thing this season.
Yep.
And I think I said to you guys today over the instant messages, but I said, if you ever want to win the A-League, you throw money at this season.
Yep.
Stable coach in his third season, a squad that made a great run of it this season, despite everything that was going on around it, and players who have proven themselves at this level, you put a little bit of pizzazz on top of that with the last few signings you have, this could be a tilt at the toilet seat, not just finals.
I agree. I think if it does depend on how you replace Uli.
Yep.
And what you get for your defensive midfield, your 6 or 8 in that kind of, if Devlin stays, then you want to get a 6.
Mm.
If he goes, then you want to get an 8, that kind of space. Those two signings are critical. But if you nail those, then you are looking at a top 3, possibly top table.
Tell you what, there's some rumors going around about that Uli replacement on the A-League Hub Twitter account today. Check that out if you want to see those.
I'm not going to get involved in that whatsoever. You guys can speculate all the hell you like.
Yeah, cool. Great. To move on. Season review.
Yes.
Let's do it. Such a strange season, and it's going to be unlike any other season the Phoenix will ever play, I think.
Hopefully.
Both in terms of where they play the games, but also just the way that the season went.
Let's pray this is a one-off.
Yeah.
Because it's been pretty awful.
Yeah. Well, it was good, but therefore bad. Like, good to not just be in a spoon battle, but also, yeah, like,
let's be honest, it really looked like we were going to be in a spoon battle to start with. And to be fair, it was probably going to be one that we would have had to accept because the situation we were in was never looking like we're going to be competitive.
I think I remember saying at the start of the season that this is a season where you just want to make sure that things don't completely fall apart, that you have a club to come back to and build from after that. And the Phoenix in every way exceeded that. But let's talk about that start of the season. We're going to split the season up into four chunks that are not even in game length but kind of have themes to them in terms of results. The first chunk being looking like a bottom of the table team.
Yeah.
We had
the first eight games, and it was an horrendous run.
Yeah, we started with a loss to Sydney 2-1, had a draw with MacArthur 1-1, lost to Newcastle 2-1, which is bad.
Well, it turned out to be bad. We didn't realise at the time.
Yeah, we didn't realise how bad at the time. Then we got a win over the Central Coast Mariners, which was a shining light in that start of the season.
And that wasn't a deserved win either.
No, and the Central Coast Mariners at that point in the season were high-flying.
I also remember at the time we were discussing, we didn't think we were playing badly in those games prior. The Sydney game, we weren't bad. MacArthur, we should have won bar the red card.
Yeah.
There was in the Newcastle game, we were the better side in that game too. There was a lot of signs there, but we couldn't get it over the line.
We had a 2-1 loss to Sydney FC, a 2-0 loss to the Mariners, then drew 2-2 with the Wanderers, then lost 2-0 to the Melbourne Victory, which, again, that's a bad result.
That's the standout for the season for me as being the worst result because it was our worst performance.
Yep.
And we deserve to lose, whereas going into that game, going off the – I remember sitting at Dave's and having that discussion where we should have won that game. Prior to the game, the way we had been playing and not getting the points, we were the better side.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. They were sitting above us on the table, but we were the better side. We should definitely have won it. And then they outplayed us and we were horrendous.
Yeah, so the top of the half of the season, top quarter of the season, really quite strange because there were results in there where we were good and should have got points. Result in there where we shouldn't have got points, and then just some horrific performances against bad teams. And that's essentially at the end of the season what's cost us.
Yeah,
and I think it's an interesting one as well because of the nature of the COVID-affected season.
Yeah.
We played a number of teams twice within that first kind of start of the season.
Yeah, Mariners, Wanderers.
And Sydney as well.
Wanderers as well? Maybe not.
Possibly. Certainly Sydney and Mariners, which the Sydney games we were very in.
Yeah.
And given, you know, how traditionally good Sydney are, it's frustrating to go down twice in quick succession to them in games that we probably should have got something out of. And the Mariners at that point, as you say, were high flying, but maybe if you'd had a game against them later in the season when we were saying our good run that we, you know, we'll talk about later, you might have taken points off them too, you know, and it just because of the nature of the COVID affected season, this was the only way you could do it. But it did mean we ended up with quite congested periods against the same teams throughout the entire season. And I think during that starting one, some of those were some tough games to have to play. You know, Sydney first up and then only a couple of weeks later you got them again. That's a tough way to start your season.
That's a good point. The Victory game is the first time that we went outside of New South Wales to play somebody.
Yep.
And tanked it. So I hadn't even considered that when I was looking at this list here, but you're right. It's all the New South Wales games, isn't it?
Yep.
Because you couldn't leave.
Nope.
Yeah.
And if we'd hit some of those teams at a different point of the season with some form under our belt, you'd have to think we might have taken some points here. But then, you know, if you'd been playing a normal full round, you wouldn't have had the same backloaded season that we did have that went quite well for us. So it swings around about, right?
Yeah. Should we move on to next quarter?
Yep.
Because we don't want to talk about the losses.
What's next third? Okay, it's kind of broken into thirds.
Yeah, okay. The next one is pretty much a good run that makes us look like a middle of the table team. We got our second one of the season against the Jets, dispatched them 2-0, then got a 3-0 over Perth, which is really, I think, the moment when you go, this team might have something to them.
Yep.
A 4-3 loss to the Wanderers that would have been 4-0 if not for a centimetre.
Yep. It was a hell of a game, though.
Oh, it was a great game.
Hell of a game.
Should have won it, really. But
yeah.
Then a 1-0 draw with Brisbane. Then we smashed the Victory 4-1. Had a 1-0 loss to MacArthur. And we're 2-0. Sorry, and then a 3-2 loss to Melbourne City. That's the end of our run there. But like, even those two losses in there, the 4-3, it was an 84th minute goal to Yeboah, and we equalised if not for a VAR offside. And then the Melbourne City game, it was in the last 10 minutes that we were doing that commentary in that game that we lost that one. So in both of those games that we lost in this chunk, we were right in it.
Yep.
For a draw.
Yep. There were, and I think that is a key theme for the season. We actually been in a lot of these games that we've been losing. That run there, the three wins, the one draw, and the three losses through those seven games.
Yeah.
It was It was a definite turnaround. It was a definite sign that actually, you know what, this team does have something. It's we've had a poor run to start with. We're sitting at the bottom of the table, but actually we've got settled and we're kind of okay with our environment. And whilst it's not what we would have back home, you know, we are able to perform now that we're comfortable. And that's kind of what it looked like. It just took them a while to settle into everything that was going on.
Yeah.
Because it was so different.
That 3-0 against Perth stood out for me at the time because it seemed undeserved. It seemed like Perth were playing us off the park. We managed to score three and when we won the game. But looking back now, that was just a sign of what was to come.
Yeah.
That kind of performance was in us. And we saw that against the Victory soon after where we just dispatched them. And
yeah, that was the highlight that was until the last game. That was my best performance of the season, that 4-1 against Victory. I thought, and they didn't really deserve the one. I mean, it was a decent goal in the end, a nice celebration. But
was it the chip?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the flip celebration where he's done a hammy.
That's quite funny.
Yeah. But that was a great performance. And yeah. we just absolutely played them off the park. And we don't see that happen from the Knicks too often. And it happened several times later in the season. But that one was my standout.
Yeah, and I think realistically at this point, though, we're thinking we were not a playoff chance. You know, this was at the point where we'd moved from we're wooden spoon contenders to we're still not making the six, but we're probably not going to be complete mugs either. But realistically, during this period, we still thought no chance we're making the six. We thought at best you're making, you know, middle of the table. And as it turned out, that is where we ended up. But the hope of making the six did not exist at this point. It was just we're not going to be mugs like we might have looked after those first eight games. You thought, shit, we're going to wooden spoon this.
Yeah.
We suddenly turn it around. It's like, it's not going to be a great season, but it is what it is.
Let's get beyond the spoon and be happy with where we end up and write it off as the COVID-impacted crap.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's exactly right. This is the period we were talking about. That's fine. You know, you just got to hold your own and look forward to next year, you know. Don't shit the bed and press on for the following season.
Give these kids some minutes.
We were looking like early on that we could be the team that Victory were in the end, where you've just got to strip it down and start again because it's horrendous. It was looking like it could be that if the results keep going that way. Yep. You end up finishing the season with 15 points. But at this point, you're going, okay, we're probably going to end up on 30, 35 points, 7th to 9th place, that's fine. And it was the next set of games that really turned that around, which was started off with a 3-2 win, the Ben Wayne late goal against Western United. I think VAR looked at it and didn't rule it out. Is that, am I remembering correctly?
So it was given as an offside?
That's right, VAR ruled
that it was onside, yeah.
Then we went to Perth, beat them 3-1, which is always fun to do.
Massive and so unexpected.
Yeah. Went to Tasmania, drew 1-1 with Western United. Again, frustrating.
Yeah.
Then beat Adelaide 2-1, played out a couple of boring nil draws with Brisbane and Adelaide in a row, and then had a 2-2 draw with Melbourne City. And it's these, particularly the Brisbane and Adelaide draws, but also the Melbourne City draw, that really sting now.
So not now for the Melbourne City one. That was a good point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Melbourne City were at that time were flying.
Sure. But Brisbane and Adelaide in particular.
And in goalless draws as well.
Yeah. Where one's enough.
Yeah.
You're scoring also fun against other teams, and then to not be able to get one against these guys.
Yeah. But I think what we shows here is this is the start of the unbeaten run, but this is also when Taylor came back.
Correct.
And this is what we alluded to earlier. The impact that
that's
he
a good
had
word, alluded.
Yeah, the impact that he had on the defensive solidity of our team cannot be overstated. He was excellent. I think he more than halved our goals per game rate when he played against.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we were sitting up somewhere in the high 1 point somethings and got it down to about 0.6 or something like that.
David lost my clarification there.
Yeah, I'm just like, you think realistically he was costing us half a goal a game?
There's some pedant out there going like, oh, Cam's a Harrods goal per game. We actually scored more when Taylor was on the park.
You know what? He's a fucking defender.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure our listenership are smart enough to know what I mean.
Yeah. But again, you said it, but you can't understate how much Taylor changed this team.
Yeah, I said overstayed. But yeah.
See, I should have put you up on that.
Yeah, you should have
and I accidentally corrected you. I didn't realize you said overstate.
Yeah.
But that's the difference. Like, huge. Absolutely. Yeah. There was a foundation of an okay team there, and he turned it into a good one that should have been in the grand final.
Yeah.
Like, that's as simple as that, really.
It's as simple as that. And if you take that form from that run from when Taylor came back to the end of the season, that is form that gets you in the top three.
But not maybe not this chunk that we've with the draws in it, but certainly the chunk afterwards.
No, sure, but over the 11 games total.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you've got I think how many?
6 wins, 5 draws.
Yeah, and you're averaging over 2 points a game.
Yeah.
And that's massive. Yeah. And if you get 2 points a game over your 26-game season.
You come first.
Yeah, because the City ended on 48 points, I think it was.
Well, I think any season, if you get over 2 points, you will win. I think there's maybe one season where somebody got 60 points to win it when they ran away.
Barcelona, yeah. When we were just destroying everybody.
Yeah, but that's the only time that someone's done that. I think most times it's around 48 to 54 that you win the league with. So
that alone, that form is massive.
We're all pointing at me. Nah.
Oh, sorry. I thought you indicated to talk there.
The only thing I'd say about this run at this point that we're talking about here, those three draws, is I don't think realistically at this point it felt like a run.
No.
It was, but no one was talking about the undefeated run we were on. You know, we'd had 2 goalless draws and we happened to eke out a result against City, and it felt good to get that result, but it didn't feel like we were on some kind of run at this point.
Was this 7 games at this point? Something like that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games in a row. Yeah,
but it didn't feel like it, right?
But I think that was also overshadowed by the fact that we were coming home for the first time in the next game. I think there was so much being talked about for that game that's why the 7 games kind of fell away a little bit.
To be honest, I didn't even notice it until after our home game.
Yeah.
After we played United here, and then it was like, actually, you know what? That is a run, and that's a massive run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk about that game, because that game was huge for so many reasons.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously going to be the highlight of the season for everybody.
Yeah.
It was not just – actually, it is just fucking everything. It's just the crowd, the emotion of being home, actually seeing your boys and getting to do what you love to do on a Saturday afternoon.
It felt like normality again for the first time in 18 months or however long it's been.
24,000 of your closest friends. It was just awesome.
It wasn't normal at all because we had to queue up to get into the stadium. But
did you?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
You didn't? We did. But yeah, for all those reasons, it was memorable and huge. But then we fucking smashed them as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was the best part about the whole thing. Yep.
They never even looked likely.
I think it would have been a great day even if we'd, you know, drawn this or something. But instead, it was just the pinnacle of the last 5 seasons in many ways. You know, it was, I'm sure there are Phoenix moments bigger than this, but certainly this is the biggest one in a long, long while where, you know, we had a genuine rival in the league come here for one game ever.
Yeah.
You know, it felt like. And we smashed them in front of a huge crowd, and it was just fantastic.
Local boys scored the opening goal.
Yep.
Which was magnificent. Celebrations in front, the slide to the corner post and celebrations in front of the Fever.
2 goals in front of the Fever.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and even down to the aftermatch. The aftermatch was excellent. The players were incredible. Mixing with the fans, getting autographs, getting photos, all that kind of stuff. It was just brilliant. It's like they hit the right tone at every single part of the day, and they got the right result.
Yeah.
One of my favourite sporting experiences. It has to be up there.
I mean, I genuinely believe that this game will be talked about in the same way that we talk about the Newcastle Jets playoff 11 years ago now.
And the Perth one.
And the Perth one. Those two games, particularly the Newcastle game. I genuinely believe that in 10 years' time, we'll be talking about that West United game in the same way we talk about those games. Like, it'll just be memorable for all 24,000 people there, and the people that were there will talk about it for years.
Yeah.
The Adelaide Save the Knicks game kind of was that a little bit, and then it just has fallen away over time.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen to the West United game. It's going to be huge.
That was 10,000 more people there at this game.
Yeah.
Which makes the difference, right? And they hadn't been home, and I can't talk about it enough. You know, it was just such a cool experience.
And at this point, it was the first time that we sort of realized, hang on, we could make the playoffs here.
Yeah.
Win the next 3 games and we're in the playoffs. And that wasn't completely out of question.
No,
out of the question.
How we'd been playing it.
And we were playing Wanderers, Perth, and MacArthur.
Yeah.
All teams that were in and around us. We'd just knocked out West United from the playoffs. We then were going over to Western Sydney, and somehow we won that game.
That was incredible, honestly.
That was just an onslaught.
Yeah.
And when we won that game, you thought, surely.
Yeah.
Surely there's that we can do this.
It's the hope that kills you.
Yeah. And then Eden Park happened.
Yeah. We've covered this obviously in detail in the pod at the time. And again, it was another incredible day at the football.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely amazing day at the football.
Yeah. I mean, if Wellington hadn't happened the week before, this would have been huge.
Yeah.
But it was less huge because Wellington just happened. And of course, Wellington was going to have all the extra emotions to it.
Yeah.
But just, the way that game went was just so unfortunate. You think you got a penalty in the first minute and it got taken away, and then going up and have an equaliser go in, and then going behind for only 8 minutes in the end, but going behind. And then to think you almost had it at the end, like, was so close. and then almost have it three more times.
Yeah.
Only to have people for absolutely ridiculous, incorrect reasons wave away penalties. Yeah, just it was just frustrating. It was like so close.
Yeah. Yep. I can't disagree.
Well, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then all the results went badly elsewhere, but we messed up and we had put it in the hands of other games and were requiring two or three games to go our way. And of course they never were going to go into. And then because there was no pressure on us, we went out and smashed MacArthur. I think if we had to win the MacArthur game, if that was the way that we get in the playoffs, we wouldn't have, but there was so much freedom.
That ended up being our best performance of the season. Like up to that point, I say I thought it was the victory, but the way we dismantled them and the way we played that game was just beautiful football.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say it was the best performance, personally. It was certainly up there. I would say the West United performance probably might have been.
Do you even remember that one, though?
West United?
Yeah,
I do.
Because I think we need to – stepping away from the emotion around the day –
that will always cloud it, but
– exactly. And, yes, I totally agree that as an occasion, West United is the highlight of the season and it will be remembered. But as a purely footballing performance, we dismantled MacArthur and a 3-0 flattered them.
See, But I think we did the same thing to West United. I thought that we played the first half where we absolutely deserved to be 1-0 up and we managed to get our goal. We got it early in the MacArthur game. The MacArthur game, we got it right at the death of the first half, but we got our goal that we deserved and they never had a look in. And there was much more riding on that game. West United actually cared about winning that game. Sure. Whereas MacArthur were in the playoffs, couldn't get a home playoff by the time that they played or couldn't or something. Resting players injured. Like,
they could have got a home playoff at the
end. Yeah, no, they were playing for a home playoff.
Maybe
if
afterwards.
They'd have finished fourth.
Oh, is it really? Okay. All right, sorry.
If we'd beaten them initially, if we'd got beaten Perth, we'd have finished fourth.
Okay, ignore that part. But they had resting players injured, all that stuff. They weren't really trying to win this game. That's why I think the performance was good, but not the best.
United weren't trying to win that game, and we covered that at the time. No. They weren't. And I distinctly recall you saying, because I listened to that podcast today, that they just were not trying.
You've got the receipts there, Cam. You've really done me by using my own words against me.
So no, they weren't trying. No, we dismantled MacArthur. And if that's a sign of what's to come, I'm quite excited for next season.
Well, I think kind of related to this, I'm going to put out an unpopular opinion in that I think it's actually good that we didn't make playoffs.
I agree with you.
Because I think this leaves a sense of some hype and unfinished business going into next season, which we can really capitalize on. I think a lot of, I don't know the right term for them, but let's call them fringe supporters. And I think even that might be generous because a number of people who don't really care about football at all, I found this season, were at least having a passing interest. As regular fans, we found it much harder to connect with the team and it felt difficult to support. But I think for a lot of people, with how disrupted the world has been, have got a little bit more engaged in sport. You know, there's been less other stuff they can get out and do, and they've been following teams they might not follow a bit more closely. And the Phoenix, I think, benefited from a little bit of that. And so the hype around having one game in Wellington and one game in Auckland, so depending on where you lived, you felt like there was only one game unless you were, you know,
crazy,
sad, tragics like us. Yeah. But so people genuinely felt like there was one game and they got to go out there and see a game that excited them. And then they kind of followed those last few and it really felt like, we just missed out. We were hard done by, you know, and it leaves that kind of lingering feeling for those, you know, fringe supporters going into next season. If the sense of unfinished business for us, you know, it'll always feel a bit like, we missed out on playoffs or whatever. But I think short of us winning the trophy, which was probably a possibility.
The first time ever a possibility, really.
If we'd gone into the playoffs and had got knocked out in round one of them or something, that sense of unfinished business for those fringe supporters wouldn't be there for our homecoming season.
Look at the Mariners right now.
Correct.
Great season. First time in a long time they made the playoffs. Had a home playoff, hosted it, lost 2-0.
Yep.
Albeit extra time, but that just it just puts a downer on your season.
Yep.
We've seen this early season when he goes to the playoffs, the Asian Cup year when that tanked us and we lost 2-0 to Melbourne City in the first playoff. Last season when we had a great run, finished third.
Last season, that's the season I think where we were first genuinely a title contender.
Not by the time the playoffs came around.
No.
But sure.
Pre-COVID, up to March, we were definitely on a tear and would comfortably finish
second. And then we lost, was it 1-0 to victory? Something. We lost a victory in the first playoff and that was that, Perth.
Yeah. And it just completely crushed any sense going into the next season. So I think short of winning the title, which could have happened, we'll never know, I think we're better we didn't make the playoffs at this point. We went out on a dominant win, having that sense of unfinished business about it. And I think coming into next season, being able to mark it off that Western United game in Wellington and that performance at Eden Park and, you know, build that support into next season will be huge, particularly when you've got, you know, guys like Hooper that you've signed, Stephen Taylor. I think there's real possibility here to push for next season to be absolutely massive, not in terms of just performance on the field, which I think realistically could be one of our best seasons ever, but it could be off the field as well. And that would just be fantastic if those two things align. Because we've had seasons before where the performance has been good, but the crowds have been rubbish, or crowds have been great, performance has been shit, you know? And if we can get those two things to come together, man, we would be unstoppable.
Yep, totally agree.
Yeah, and that's that. That's the season. I think I was just trying to think about whether I'm going to make this comparison or not while you were saying that. But compare it to All Whites 2010. Well, we come away from that. It's a little bit different, but we come away from that with three draws, and you're like, you feel like a bit hard done by that we didn't get into the round of 16. And you talk about the undefeated.
But I disagree.
But making the playoffs is obviously – making the round of 16 is huge. I don't think that it's quite the same, but like the undefeated thing is certainly a thing we still talk about, and we wouldn't get that if we made the playoffs for that like little thing.
Yeah.
Sorry, I said playoffs, I meant round of 16. But for that little thing of like, we had this big undefeated run, it would have ended because we chances are it would have ended.
Really? You think we wouldn't have won the World Cup?
No, I mean Phoenix. Yeah. It would have ended in the Well, I don't know, they absolutely would have ended for the, they would have not come home undefeated.
We weren't beating the Dutch. No,
exactly. I don't think that comparison is quite right, but there are some similarities there.
Indeed. And it kept that kind of, that feeling, that sense to it for a lot longer because it didn't end.
You know?
The undefeated thing is still true, you know? And so rather than being a thing for the next, you know, couple of weeks, it's been a thing for the next years.
It's going to be a thing until we play at the next World Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not qualifying a couple times has dampened it slightly, right?
No.
But it's still pretty amazing.
It's kept
it
alive. I think it's actually kept that alive because we haven't lost the undefeated streak.
Again, only for sad tragics like us.
Yes.
Whereas if you think about the hype that continued into that next qualification cycle for the fringe, it was still there. People held on to that. And I think the same is going to be true until next season started. Yeah. I think there will be some of those fringe people who are not necessarily actively seeking out Phoenix news, but you know, when you've got big announcements like Gary Hooper signing, they're going, oh, that sounds quite interesting. And you know, if we can keep that timing and those sorts of snippets of news coming through and some decent performances and all of that kind of stuff going into the start of the season, I think we're going to be in really good shape, crowd-wise and football-wise.
And if you're pushing the Hooper signing on the ex-Celtic, ex-Norwich City Premier League striker angle, people are going to go, oh, that name, that's...
You know, I've heard of those things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Instead of the, he's come from India and he's 35 years old. But if you push the right angle, then it could definitely spark that in people. I totally agree.
Yeah. Let's move on to the squad. Has your app, Cam, got stats next to all the players? Because I've got the player list, but I don't have up-to-date stats on them all.
Just make them up. Give Cam some receipts for next week.
Yeah. He'll come back and prove me completely wrong. Let's start at the top of the playing list and go in numeric order, shall we? Which starts with... Stefan Marinovic, number one. He played six or games or so and then got overtaken by Oli Sale and he's leaving the club, which is fair enough, you'd say.
Yep.
Did his job. He got overtaken by a player who just ended up being better for us.
His goals conceded was like 1.67 a match, which is pretty accurate for the pre-Taylor defensive line.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Do you think we're rose-tinting Oli Sale's reign as goalkeeper because of, let's talk about Oli Sale as well now, because of Taylor being back for most of his games?
No. I don't, because he made some excellent saves and he kept us in matches. Yeah,
I think he might have fed off some of that energy. I think it's hard, or would be hard, to be on the field with Tails and not feed off his energy. So he probably gained a bit from that, but Ollie certainly brought something himself to that. He was making some phenomenal saves and he was bringing his own energy to his defenders. You know, they were building off that, knowing that, you know, even if they missed a tackle, there was a keeper behind them who was going to, you know, do everything to stop it. It wasn't just going to be wave one in like some A-League keepers we've seen in the past.
Yeah.
You know? It was going to be, we're going to fight to the death on this for that clean sheet.
And they did. Yeah. Oli Sale, we'll sign him up for the next forever years.
I think he's signed up for at least another couple. Anyway,
yeah. So. He's the long-term.
The only question now is who's going to be your reserve, right? You know?
Yeah.
And I can see why Marinovic looks at that crystal ball and goes, it's not me. I don't want to sit behind Oli. I'm a good enough keeper. I can go and, you know, shot myself around elsewhere and you know.
And to be fair, in the A-League, if you, and this is something the Phoenix have done obviously in the past with Moss and Paston being the ones that stick in mind, but we've actually had two number ones and they've both been very good keepers. That's very un-A-League. That doesn't happen often in the A-League. You definitely have a genuine understudy. I think we'll be going that way this time. Yep. I think no matter who we get in, unless it's someone like, who is free, Max Crocombe from, because he's been released by the Victory, unless it's someone like him, and he could be a genuine number one.
Yep.
If he comes, he will start at number two without doubt.
Yeah, I think it was in many ways very A-League as well that Ollie stepped up. I mean, there have been a lot of times where we have seen A-League clubs have that obvious number one and an understudy, and number one's been injured. And we've seen a number of keepers in that position who have stepped up when their time has come. Yep. There are definitely examples in the past where you're like, oh, good, we're playing that reserve keeper who no one's ever seen play A-League football before, and they keep a clean sheet and go on a run of four or five games doing bloody well until, for whatever reason, the rain ends. Mm. But Ollie just kept going and going and going.
Yeah. We're gonna switch the order slightly and just go in order of appearances made because that's the order I managed to get stats up for the players.
Oh, really? Because I've got Ryan and split into defense, midfield.
Oh,
and,
do you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go important players to least important players. We can rock it through the bench squaddies at the end.
That's about to name our most important player. Go.
Tim Payne.
Yeah.
Played every game. Actually, started every game.
There's only one other player I'd have put above him at this season at all.
Taylor?
Early.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah. I think, and the reason for that, yes, the defensive solidity was massive once Taylor came back.
Mm-hmm.
But Tim Payne started that season playing right back.
Yeah.
And he ended the season being the linchpin centre back before Taylor came back and then kept his place after Taylor came back when we had fit centre backs, three of them, in the squad.
Yeah.
That says everything you need to know about Tim Payne for this season.
Yeah. I mean, it was summed up by that celebration and the Wanderers win, doesn't it? Double fisting. That's how much he cares. Clayton Lewis, again, played every game, came off the bench twice. But yeah, the only player who played more minutes than Clayton this season was Tim Payne. Great to see.
Yeah. Great to have signed him for another couple of years.
Yeah.
Perfect. Hope he can be the hometown hero that Leo Bertos used to be.
Yeah, I think he will be.
Yeah.
I think he has the potential to be three times what Leo Bertos ended up being. The early there, Bertos for sure, but...
Sure, but you know, towards the end of his career, after 2010, he tends to go down because he aged, which is fine.
But we've got Clayton at the right time.
Lewis has got another 5 years at his peak to come.
The trick will be whether he gets good enough to go overseas in those 5 years or whether we can hang on to him, whether he's going to be the Kakache or the Fenton, basically.
Sure, and I hope he ends up being a Kakache.
Totally.
I hope he ends up being a Singh. That would be fantastic if he was.
But also...
if he's not...
If he's a Fenton, perfectly happy.
We want him to
be. Great for the Phoenix.
Yeah, we'll have him and we will keep him.
Yeah. Yeah. David Ball. 24 games, all of them were starts.
Yeah, I think he missed one for a red card.
Yep.
Which was fair.
Yeah, it was.
Yep.
Maybe it was two for the red card and he played all the others, or maybe, you know, I'm not unsure, but honestly, his work rate. I think maybe actually you guys talked last week about who gets the armband for next season and you settled on Taylor. I disagree and I think it falls to Ball.
I would love to see it be Ball. That I would be happy with that.
Yeah. I think I disagree with it going to Ball for hey, let's keep you around, keep you happy last week. But I'm fine with it going to Ball as well.
I don't think it goes to Ball for keep around, keep you happy.
That's what I said last week. Yeah.
It goes to him because he is a leader.
Yep.
And he is a player that everybody looks to.
Yep.
And Taylor's the same, without doubt. And Taylor has got mana. Ball is approachable and there's something about him as a guy which I think lends itself to genuine captaincy.
Uli, sorry, did you want to say
something? No. I just completely agree.
Uli had a few games injured, so he played 23, 21 of them were starts, I think, off the bench late in the season. Integral.
Player of the season.
Yeah.
Without doubt.
Yeah.
It's the reason why he got offered the contract.
Player of the league, really. Like,
who did win the player of the player of the season?
He won the Alex Tobin Award, which is the Fox Sports Award. Yep. This is the Johnny Warren, which is the league award, which I don't think he'll win, purely on the fact we didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
The same reason why Messi's not the best player of all time, because he hasn't won the World Cup. Like, same reason. Like, he didn't carry his team far enough to win that Johnny Warren, I don't think.
That's complete and utter rubbish. Messi's the best player ever in the history of football.
Louis Fenton. 18 starts, 23 appearances total.
Dependable.
Great. Yeah. Exactly what you want. Kiwi, non-import.
Yeah.
Not Australian, but that would be fine if he was.
Yep.
Tower boy.
Yeah. Needs to improve his crossing.
I thought that he had the best season we've seen him in a long time once he got to the box. I think previously he's been a lot poorer, and I think he's been harshly judged on this season because of his past. Mm-hmm. But I think this season he got forward, and I was getting excited when he got forward.
That was great. Yep. Still needs to improve his crossing. Whilst it is better, it can still
crosses a low percentage anyway. Like,
well, and I think as well, he gets harshly judged by the fact we had some other players providing just sublime ball into the box.
Yeah, when you've got someone like Biscopo if and Uli,
and even Lewis as well with some, you know, the cross field balls into the box he's making. You know, the variety of really sublime balls we were playing here. If you compare Louis' crossing this season to someone like a Leo Bertos, I actually don't know that Louis comes off that unfavorably. I don't think he was that poor. I just think this season we had some sublime players on the field playing some just phenomenal balls, and Louis looked bad in comparison to that. I'm not going to say he was, you know, doing great there, but I think we have seen a lot of people in those sorts of roles being quite mediocre.
And you still do.
Only hasn't shown because we didn't have Uli and Reno and Lewis on the field to make them look like mugs.
Cammy Devlin also didn't look like a mug. 17 starts, 6 off the bench. Solid player.
Yep.
Keep him around if you can.
Yeah, hopefully he accepts the deal that he's been offered.
He's had that on the table for several weeks now, if not months. I don't know for certain, but he's obviously shopping himself around.
Well, and I think as well the fact he hasn't said no is also a good sign. I think he's young, he's had a standout season, and it's not unreasonable to shop yourself around. I think we've seen that with players in the past. I think the suggestion isn't that strong that he's leaving, whereas guys like Rojas, when it was clear that he wasn't going to re-sign, you know, the rumor was so strong, he's going somewhere else, we just need to know where it is. You know, it wasn't, oh, will he stay, will he go? Whereas with Devlin, I think there is a genuine consideration of the offer still ongoing, but it's if someone comes to me with $2 million, you know what, I'll take that. Yeah. And fair play to him. You know, he's a good player. He could go to Europe. He could certainly move around the A-League. He's good enough for that. But I think he has ties to Ufi, and I think that goes in our favor. He's obviously performing well for us, and I think for him the consideration is, do I take that shot elsewhere for some money, or do I see it out another year or two and take an even bigger offer later?
Yeah.
Fair play to him.
Next is James McGarry. 15 starts, 7 off the bench for 22 in total. It was great seeing him back at the club, really.
Yeah, it was. And I thought McGarry did very well, but he was only overshone by when Sats got involved.
Yeah.
It was that simple. I don't think I feel like McGarry was doing a lot wrong. I think he was putting out very adequate A-League performances.
And again, he's the player that you need in your squad.
Yeah.
He's not sucking up money. He does the job perfectly well. And people are harshly judging this section of players that we're going to come to now. Fenton's one of them. He's one of them. They're judging them against your Ulis, and they're never going to be that player. We don't need them to be that player. No. So,
Honestly, I just think he got passed by a kid
who
found a niche and developed skills which were required. It's as simple as that.
And fit the role that Uli was asking perfectly.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ufi, not Uli.
Yeah. I totally agree. McGarry is exactly who we want, and he will get plenty of minutes in the seasons to come.
Yeah.
And I think as well, it was good to see how far he's come since we last saw him. He is a very different player to the McGarry we saw previously.
Yeah.
It was just unlucky that Sats got a shot and again took it.
Ben Wayne, obviously that 5-goal stretch where he scored in every game.
Yeah.
Great from a young guy, 19 years old still.
This was
made 14 starts in the season, which is huge.
Yeah, this is great. The whole Wayne train thing is a social media, it's a goldmine for the guys when you're trying to create engagement for a group of people who can't actually attend the games. It's that's the kind of thing you need, and that's the kind of phenomenon which really helped with the season.
Choo-choo, motherfuckers.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's absolutely awesome. And it was great to see him play well. It's great to see him get all those goals. And hopefully next season he kicks on, because he's got averaging 1 and 3 for the season is very good.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him continue to do that or improve it over the season to come.
Yeah, he'll get the opportunity with Hamed probably going. We're coming to him next.
The only thing I'll say about him, even remotely negative, is I think we need to see more of him not being afraid. We saw some performances there where, you know, he was very physical. He was holding up the ball nicely. He was winning everything. And then we saw, you know, the next week him getting pushed around, getting pushed off the ball. And, you know, I think he needs to grow into that role more and not be afraid to be a presence up there. He can be that presence. We've seen him be able to do it. And then some games he just seems to go off the boil a little. And it hasn't necessarily affected his ability to score, but we probably need him to be consistently whatever sort of striker he's going to be. If he's going to be that guy who can be physical and hold up the ball, we need to trust he can do that, because you can't have your midfield or your defenders trying to find him up there to find this week is the week he's not going to jump for a header, you know? And that would be my only thing I'd say about him. He's so young, that's not a particularly bad thing, but we just need him to grow into it. And it's not to say he has to be a particular stereotype of striker, but a guy like that who could kick on, we really need to know what he's capable of and what he's going to produce week in, week out.
Speaking of growing into their role, Tom Mohamed grew into his role during the season. Yep. He started out really poor and he had a lot of people saying he's not the player that we were told he was going to be. And by the end of the season, he was. Yep. Simple as that.
Golden boot. And I think that probably sums it up.
Yep.
He turned me around because I was 100% in the I'm not comfortable with what he's delivering.
For the money that we're paying.
Exactly. Yeah, if we weren't paying that kind of money, okay.
Yeah.
But we're paying a lot of money. Whereas by the end of the season, and again, it coincided with the 11-game run. I think he scored, what was it? It's like 12-9 or 9, I don't know.
9-12, I think.
Yeah, so a phenomenal amount of goals in the last half of the season.
Bunch of them being penalties, but he scored them, and that's important, as we know very clearly from the back half of the season.
For the record, it's going to show that he scored X number of goals in the season, not X number of penalties.
And we've had penalty problems in the Phoenix for the past.
And some of them, great goals, good assists, you know. Just it was exactly the sort of thing we needed out of him, was to be a striker who just finished.
Yeah, he was unlucky to have that goal against the Wanderers ruled out, which would have got us to the point that we needed. But literally centimetre in it from a great goal. So,
Highlight for me for him for the season was the two back heel assists that he got. His first assist of the season and his last assist of the season. Great. Was excellent.
The only thing I'd say about him that I thought we'd see more is him being more of an aerial presence. He's showing that throughout his career, but we really didn't see it for the Phoenix. He certainly provided some goals, and you know, it doesn't matter that he didn't bang in a bunch of headers, but there was a period there where we were trying to utilize his aerial ability and it just never came.
Yeah.
And
I mean, he did score some with his head.
Yeah, the West United one.
You say he was an aerial presence, though, across the season? Because it just, I didn't see it.
Cam Devlin would have scored the West United one. Shortest player on the park, let's be honest.
It was pretty straightforward, yep.
Alex Rufa, same number of games as Hamed. Played more of a part in the season than I thought he did.
But not as many starts, I don't think.
Exactly the same. Perhaps not 16 many. Starts, 5 off the bench. Yeah. And he actually played 19 more minutes than Hamed. So
interesting. Yeah. Hamed's minutes came later than the season. Alex's came earlier in the season.
Yeah, when we weren't as good as a team.
Exactly. And it's come about, his lack of minutes later came about with the combination with Lewis and Devlin.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until they actually found that works really, really well together. Those two players complement each other very, very well that Rufa got shunted out. But the same thing happened last year.
Yeah.
Right? When he got injured, the combination between Devlin and Steinman worked so well. But they didn't realise that at the time until, it's happened. Wow, that's really good. We'll go with that.
Soterio only made 7 starts, but played 20 games. So came off the bench 13 times. For what we're asking from him, absolutely solid.
No, he showed exactly what I was talking about early in the season when people bag him, but he has a niche and he does that job really well.
Yeah.
And he showed that for us with a few goals, crucial ones as well.
He managed to add the crucial goals to his locker, which he hasn't had before.
If he can double that, double the number he's getting, he's going to be a great resource.
I'm not sure he will, but I'm fine with that because he's not your starting striker. We're not relying on him for that.
No, but I would like to see him. At the moment, he's a 2 or 3 goal player. I'd like him to be a 5 or 6 goal player. And if he's a 5 or 6 goal player, you know that he is going to be a massive threat coming
up. How many did he score this season?
I think he got 3.
He got 4.
Yeah.
So, yeah, right. In my head, he's a 5 or 6 already.
Yeah, but he's not quite there.
He's not quite there, yeah.
If he gets there, amazing.
Yeah. Next up, when I scroll back to where I was, is Renato Piscopo. Only played 16 games, 13 of them starts, which is a lot less than I thought he was, than he had done. But he was injured for a middle of that period of that. Was it Ollie Roo's duty? Can't remember. Was it Ollie Roo's duty, Piscopo? It must have been.
No, he got knocked.
He was injured.
Right, okay.
There was a leg injury, there was a shoulder injury.
Well, shoulder he only came straight back from.
Yeah.
Anyway, fantastic. The difference. Yeah. As much as Tails made a difference at the back, he made a difference up front of creating and scoring.
I think he's our starting 10 at this point with this squad.
Yeah.
He's our starting 10.
Unless we sign someone that's Uli.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, we're playing Hooper and Wayne in front.
Yeah.
And Ball and Piscopo in behind.
Josh Laws. Solid.
He started the season okay.
But then got passed by Payne and Tails.
Passed by Payne. He would be next cab off the rank in the defenders. Yeah. Obviously, with De Vere being out long term, he would certainly be our third centre back.
Mm.
But, yeah, he started the season with De Vere and ended the season warming the bench. And hopefully that hasn't dented his confidence. Certainly getting passed by Payne may have, but without Taylor, he'd have been started.
Yeah.
And I think as well, we talked about it early with De Vere and Laws very early on, how it didn't look like anyone was really leading that line. I think if you have Laws on the field with Tails, that probably helps, because I think what we saw with De Vere and Laws was neither of them really had that leadership quality.
Yeah.
And so he's getting judged a bit on a period where there were other issues at play. And so I think as a third, he's perfectly fine. I don't have particular problems with what he did, but I think it's one of those ones where just the point of the season he was involved the most is going to mean he gets judged a little more harshly. Whereas Payne was there with Tails and had grown into that role really nicely, and it just continued to shine. Laws sadly was on the outer by that point, and I think if you keep him around as a squaddy, good.
On the flip side, Sam Sutton was involved, coming to Sam Sutton, when we were good. And he was a part of that, part of the reason we were good, but also benefited from the fact that we were good when he played.
He still hasn't lost.
Yeah.
He hasn't lost as a Phoenix player. That's phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, he was playing in the 11-game run.
Retire now, undefeated, do a DVD.
Yeah, man. Why not?
Stephen Taylor came back and changed the team.
Difference maker, yep.
Yeah. Just that's all I can say.
Yep. One of the three key players of the season.
Yeah. Only played 12 games. Two of those off the bench, which is fewer than I thought. I would have thought he was half, but I guess that's one game off half, isn't it?
No, because it was when the transfer window opened, he couldn't get in, and he obviously had his quarantine period, but he started those two early on. Then he got a knock.
Yep.
And then he came back for 10 games at the end of the season where we were undefeated.
Mm.
Yep.
Charles Lacolli in... Oh, fuck.
That wasn't even close.
Colingoy?
Lacolli Ingloy.
In Colingoy, yep.
Sorry, that's really bad for me.
At the time we signed him, worth a punt.
Yep.
Didn't work.
That was fine. We didn't need it to work.
No. But I think he was thrown on when we needed goals, but he didn't provide the difference we needed him to make.
I think if Hamed hadn't stepped up at the back of the season, we'd be looking at him and saying he's a failure. Sorry, Charles. Charles. I can't get it in my mouth.
Like a Lingoy.
Look at,
I think Link. We're really shit at this, aren't we?
Yeah, that's not going to reflect well on us.
No,
as a room full of Pakeha. Well done, boys.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, no, I'm just going to shut up.
fuck. No, I'm not. No, the next one I have to say is Mirza Mrajtovic.
Well, no, I want to talk about Charles more because I think obviously we only signed him for this season.
Yeah.
I have no problem with keeping him around for a preseason next year. I think it's worth continuing to have a look at him. I think he clearly has some more development to go. But I think there's some raw stuff there that I don't mind. I'm not saying you sign him up, but I think he's not going to be getting offers elsewhere either.
Yeah.
So keep him around for a preseason, maybe see if it's starting to come right with that, off season to work with guys like Hooper and, get involved in the system a bit more. Cause we did bring him in pretty darn late in the piece.
We did.
And just to fill a hole, it wasn't all we see where you fit into this. It was, we've got space in the squad and we just need some bodies. Sure. You're here.
And in preseason, he did score goals for us in those warm up games.
Yeah.
And he's been quality at a level down. I have no problem with keeping him around for a preseason. I'm not saying offer him a 2 or 3 year now, but he's not going to be going anywhere. I think if you keep him around, keep working with him, keep the option alive, I have no problem with that, because there's some attributes we saw that seemed decent. We just didn't get goals out of him.
I think the difference now is that assuming we have a Tasman battle for the next season, your academy players are available to you just to be that person. I think I'd prefer to see Ben Old take that place of the squaddy who can come on and have 20 minutes when we need him.
I think you will. And there's guys in that academy who are good enough.
But in this season, Ben Old would have to sit out a whole season to be with the team this time around. You don't have that. So I think that's why we might not see him stick around. Mirza Mrajtovic didn't play much at all. Yeah. 3 starts, 5 off the bench. One goal that none of us saw.
Great goal.
Best goal of the season.
Goal of the season.
Yeah.
it was the goal of the season. We called it at the time.
Yeah. Matt Redington, similar, didn't play a huge part in the season. 2 starts, 6 off the bench.
I think at the time he got signed, good signing because we didn't have any experience in that midfield space, bar Devlin and Rufa.
The midfield has no room for him anymore, though.
Yeah,
not anymore.
But again, if he's happy to stick around and we're not paying him heaps, it's a player you're going to need around the team. I'm fine with him being here.
I don't even know.
The problem for Matt is, unless he's an Australian, which he can count as an Australian, he's going to struggle to find another A-League club to play for as an import.
Yeah,
because he's not going to be import quality.
He, for me, is a better example of where a spot I would prefer to play the academy kids.
Yep.
The amount of depth we already have in midfield, plus the academy coming through behind it, I don't think you need to subsidise a spot for him just because he's a Kiwi. I think if he can find somewhere else, great, good on him, but I don't think he needs to stay with us.
Yeah. I think we've got the players. NPL. I can honestly see him ending up in NPL. And he will be a good player in the NPL, without a doubt.
Yeah. He still has a lot to offer in terms of football. I just don't think it's with us.
Liam McGing, same deal?
Yeah, he's effectively fifth centre back off the now. And if De Vere comes back, he'll be sixth. And I don't think we have the capacity for that many centre backs in our squad.
I don't think De Vere realistically has any years left in those legs.
He's only 31.
Wow, yeah, but the legs are
He looks 40. 60.
He looks as old as I do,
So good luck to him, but I think he's better served going and playing NPL or something like that than he is trying to pursue A-League still.
Do you keep De Vere? He's the next person on the list. Do you keep him?
No, same scenario as what we were talking about. De Vere and McGing.
Both gone?
NPL,
yeah.
Flick him. A player that I thought would play more the season and didn't is Tiatafe Hazen-Wihongi.
Yeah, I don't think he played a game.
He came four times off the bench, played 72 minutes total.
And actually, to be fair, that puts McGing above him, so played more minutes. So
McGing played 563, significantly more minutes.
The difference, I think, in this situation is he's a Kiwi. I would keep him because of that. I'd actually put them a fairly similar players, to be honest. They're about that same ranking in the squad in the list of your defenders. Young Kiwi guy, you can probably keep him on minimum wage. Keep him.
It's funny because I completely agree. My brain goes, get rid of McGing, keep Tiatafe. But it can only come down to being a Kiwi.
They're the same player.
Yeah.
One of them is developing a Kiwi who's an all-white. The other one is not.
And you know what,
Ufi's the coach and he realistically has no reason to care about whether he's Kiwi or Australian, right?
However, Tiatafe is infinitely marketable. Him and Lewis.
Yeah, but how much?
Young Kiwi footballers are infinitely marketable.
No, he's 72 minutes worth of marketable.
Yeah, infinite might be a stretch.
Which Clayton is infinitely marketable.
Playing time. That's not selling time.
You can't market someone.
He could do all the community hours.
To be fair, he's the kind of guy that you all send on all the community hours, right? Because he's not having to go be at training every week. He's not playing.
Well, he does have to be at training every day.
Yeah.
It's just...
The last player who played for us, I don't think we had any players who didn't play for us in the squad this season. I think that we used everybody. My list won't have anybody that we didn't. I'll check the squad list and see them. Ben Old, one game, 8 minutes, but what an 8 minutes they were.
Your first touch in football is to nutmeg your marker and beat them.
It was Diamante, wasn't it?
No, it was the right back for Western United.
Right.
That just shows a level of maturity I was not expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, he's one for the future, right? Given that role of taking over 8 minutes at the end as a time-wasting fifth substitute, like get in some minutes in 2 years' time, maybe he's a Suts.
Yep. There are probably three or four guys, I think, within the academy space who can step up to at least squad level, perhaps not necessarily into the playing the day, the match day squad, but certainly into the wider squad for training purposes. Yeah.
That is the entire squad.
He's one of them.
That's us, made it through the entire squad. A squad that overachieved, I think, in the end, like that we got more out of them than on paper I think we should have. And that's a testament to Ufi, who we haven't talked about yet, but had a fantastic season, despite the fact that we didn't make the playoffs. I thought that's one of the coaching performances of the season. One or two home games, taking a squad that is fine with a big couple of losses from the season where they were high flying, and to do that with the team, have them playing that football. Great.
You have some phenomenally unique challenges this season that no other team on the planet has had to experience. And there's a lot of times we're going, actually, the Phoenix are in such a unique position anyway. This season alone, I can't imagine all the pressures of the not even looking at the field, not looking at the football at all.
Relocating.
You've taken an entire team and everything that goes in the periphery around it, and shifted countries into finding facilities, finding places to live. building your team culture with people who are stepping away. Sam Sutton never lived out of home, and he's moved to Australia with a group of guys. That's a massive lifestyle change for them, you know? Massive growing experience for him as well. The effort that people like Ufi and Gilly have had to put in off the field, because some of the times here, they're not just being a coach. Some of them, they're being a dad, or they're being that whole father figure that they need in, for those young guys. And it's, again, we can't say enough about the effort they've put in to make this season what it has been.
Yeah. I think Ufi from a leadership perspective, but when Domi was on the pod, he talked to us about how much work Sean Gill in particular, footballing staff, put in to make that move happen, which is huge.
Yeah.
And a lot of work on him, I think
he's
saw.
He's a phenomenal club man there.
Absolutely.
Guy. Yeah. I remember a couple of seasons ago, I think he won the
Spirit of the Club.
Spirit of the Club.
Lloyd Morrison Award, yeah.
I would be putting that there again this season, because everything, there's so much work that goes on behind the scenes to make this happen, but Gilly was the guy on the ground who had to make it happen because everyone else was back here.
Didn't the club give the Lloyd Morrison Award to the club this year?
Last season,
right, okay.
Yeah. The awards haven't happened this season.
No, right. And it raised an interesting point, because I was thinking, shit, are they even going to do it? And it'll be interesting to see who wins some of that stuff if they do.
Yeah, like, it will.
And I won't be surprised if they, well, I'd be very surprised if they didn't award them, but I would be surprised if it's
an
award ceremony in the same way, because it's just, there's no reason to do it that way. Not. So I think it'll just
Do it in Wollongong with the team. These are the awards for the season. And there's not going to be things like, you know, the volunteer of the season and stuff, because there just weren't people to do that, to fill that
Fan
space.
Of the year, sex man.
I'd be disappointed if it was him.
Yeah. Speaking of awards, the Victory had their awards year, which I'm just trying to find the tweet that they sent out, because they sent a tweet. I can't find exactly where it is, unfortunately, but they sent a tweet out at the end of it all.
It may have been deleted, to be fair.
I think it has been, but they sent out all, I'm not sure if they had awards dinner. They did the Victory Medal, they call it. The Victory Medal went to Robbie Crowes, and everyone panned that because he wasn't very good this season. And then they put out a tweet that says, while we are celebrating the awarding of these awards, the club players and staff are in no way celebrating our results this season. Which, to have to put that out on Twitter is phenomenal.
Imagine the reaction your tweets have got.
Yeah.
Like, even the year that the Phoenix have finished last, and they've had their awards.
You're like, yeah.
The reaction is not there.
You're like, yeah, you were the best player this season. You can have the award. It's usually a defender or a goal, like something like someone.
Yeah. Yep, you scored the most goals, golden boot. Yep. Awesome. Yep. Get it. Yeah.
But no, their own fans were just like, Robbie was rubbish.
Yeah, and like, he was. Yeah. It was ridiculous.
There seemed to be no real basis for how on earth he won this award. I can't imagine it. It's basically your MVP of the season, and he was trash in your own fans.
Played half the season, like, yeah.
Did he even get a goal?
I think he did.
I don't know that he did.
I'll look it up.
It was just
maybe as part of his contract with signing on.
You want those sorts of MVP awards to be a celebration of something. Even if you have a bad season, you can normally find, oh yeah, you at least got the most goals, whatever, you know. It was bad, but you did a thing.
This
didn't
be a
seem like a thing to point out any good performance from him at all.
There's going to be a standout player that the Victory had. I don't know. I didn't watch enough of Victory. I couldn't tell you who it was, but they will be a player, even in a losing side, who stands out.
Yeah.
And obviously it's not Robbie
Crowes. Their fans had two or three names they were happy to bandy about of, you know, it might have been one of these few guys, you know.
Robbie Crowes was zero goals, not one of them. Zero goals.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah, so yeah, that won't happen for the Phoenix Awards. I'm interested, who would you give player of the season? You'd give it to Uli?
Uli.
Yeah, probably Uli as well.
Uli, and second would be Tim Payne.
Who would you give, what are the other awards? Players player, I guess we can't say that. Members player, young player of the year. Clayton? Tim Payne.
Yeah.
Oh, Tim Payne's still
Tim
a young
Payne's
player?
27.
All right, so they're not him?
No. Evelyn?
I think Clayton had more of an impact. Between those two, you'd assume.
Ben Wayne's got to be in the mix as well, and even Sutt. I'm not saying I'd give it to them, but I think they've got to be in the mix.
I think Sutt's, you don't.
We'll have a good shout, actually.
I think Sutt's is the first cab off the rank when you're crossing people off.
Yeah.
I think I put Wayne ahead of Devlin. Again, probably just because he's a Kiwi.
I'd probably
give it to Lewis.
Yeah. Yep, I think that's fair.
Yep. What else is there? Golden Boot. I reckon Hamed will award it to him.
Yep.
What
do you reckon about fans player of the year?
Uli. If we had to vote,
Yeah. Oh, but he's left, which like
yeah,
they don't know now. They could change it. I reckon Tails is right up there.
Yeah, I reckon Ollie would get in the mix for this one too.
Yeah. Depends how many votes you get. You get more votes, I think it goes to the name recognition of Stephen Taylor. If you get just members voting, then it probably goes to maybe to Sale. Yeah, I don't know. I'd probably give it. I mean, I'd give my award to Uli, so I don't know. But player, I reckon Ball is in with a shout for players player. For the leadership and stuff like that, because that definitely comes into that vote.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. But equally, the players player one sometimes does get to surprise us because there's a lot of stuff we just don't see.
Yeah, who's the best at Scrabble? Who lines up at Subway and orders all the cookies for the team?
It's things like Vince Leah getting it right.
Yeah,
because Vince Leah was never going to be the guy that's going to win your Player of the Year award, but the stuff that he offers off for it.
Well, and I think as well, guys like Vinny, we knew enough off the field because we had that interaction. It wasn't surprising we won it.
This season
we have no basis for what that culture and team vibe was like.
Have you got the awards list there, Cam?
Yeah, I did.
Miss anything?
Player of the Year, Members Player of the Year, Players Player of the Year, Media Player of the Year, Under 23, Golden Boot, and Lloyd Morrison.
Yeah.
Yep.
Great. That's that. That's probably the pod for this week. Should we talk about other results?
Nah, who cares?
Mariners lost, Brisbane lost. We've got fifth and sixth in the playoffs, which means that if they both win their games, fifth place is hosting a grand final, which is hilarious if that happens.
Won't.
Who's fifth?
Might. MacArthur?
It won't, though.
Was MacArthur sixth, though, because we smashed them. They were sixth.
Perth. No, not Perth.
So it'll be
Adelaide. Adelaide hosting MacArthur. But first and second, Melbourne City and Sydney both lost best players to the Socceroos.
Yeah.
So it's not completely out of the question.
A shame, because obviously I would like City to, of all the teams there, I want City to win it, purely because Des Buckingham is at City, and I'd be quite comfortable.
I was giving you a look until you said those words. I was going to be
like, what the fuck, man? I got all the money in the world, but Des is a fair point.
And it's literally just Des.
Yep.
And I would like him to get the medal because he's such an awesome guy. So
yeah. That's the pod. We'll probably not be back next week. I think we'll take a week off. Unless something major happens.
You'll say that and we'll sign 10 players.
Yeah, if we do that, then we'll come back next week. But don't be surprised if we don't, because we'll come back in 2 weeks and talk about the grand final, wrap in the season, whatever else there is in the world to talk about. Euros, maybe.
I'm loving the Euros.
I've watched nothing of it. I saw more on the TV before we started watching tonight than I've seen at all the rest of it. So
Only one game I haven't seen so far.
Haven't watched a single minute, but my TAB account's loving it, so it's good.
Well, you're nailing that.
No, mine's not. You're taking a battering in my TAB.
Got a tip for me, Dave?
Nah.
All right, okay.
Don't wash the games.
Yeah.
That's the tip.
There we go. Yeah.
That's thanks. Cam's mistake. He's all about heart, not about head.
Yeah.
True. That's the whoop. That's the pod. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back soon. Bye, everybody.
Successfully unsuccessful season brings you the Uli Oofy Bermuda Triangle that Pat can't actually work out brings you.
I have nothing.
Brings you.
I have absolutely nothing.
Brings you.